Foreclosures in some of the hardest hit areas are on the decline.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Some mixed news on the housing front today. Nationwide, sales of previously owned homes fell slightly in June, meaning home sales will probably push the year to the worst since the housing bust. But foreclosures in the state of California dropped to their lowest level since 2007. The number of default notices that have gone out in the state fell by 20% over the same time a year ago. Kenneth Rosen is a housing economist from the University of California, Berkeley. He's with us now to talk about it. Morning.
Good morning.
Why the foreclosure slowdown in California?
I think we're starting to see the problem of foreclosures ebb. We've hit a peak this past year, and the number of foreclosures are down substantially, both in California and all around the country. It doesn't mean the problem's over yet. Millions of people facing this problem, but the number of new people going into foreclosure, the new delinquencies have come down as the economy's recovered and the housing prices have stabilized.
Is it because of the economy, though? I mean, is that what's driving this?
I think that's the main thing. There's a little bit of an issue still with the servicers. Still going through negotiations with the government of how to deal with some of these. So some of it may not be fundamental. It may be a little bit administrative, but I think much of it, fundamentals are getting better. We're bottoming out of the housing market without question.
Is this all temporary, just a blip, do you think? It does take some time, right, for the soft patches to trickle into the housing market.
Right. Well, I don't think we're in a soft patch. In terms of the economy, I think it's a choppy growth. The numbers one quarter are better, one quarter are worse, but we're in a period of sustained but choppy growth. Not a fast recovery, but a moderate choppy recovery. And the housing market has been through five horrible years, and it's beginning to show signs of a very, very small bottoming. It's not a big recovery, but it's a beginning of a bottoming.
Kenneth Rosen, housing economist from UC Berkeley. Kenneth, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are pretty much mixed right now. The Dow and S&P each pretty much flat. The Dow's off about 19 points at 12,568. The NASDAQ is down about 0.5% at the moment. American Airlines said this morning it's buying more than 460 new planes, more than half from Airbus, the rest from Boeing. American said it's the biggest airline order in history. Several Chinese companies are planning to go public in the U.S. this week. Among them is Xunlei, China's third largest video streaming site. Now, it's a site that uses what's known as peer-to-peer technology. Some call it China's Napster, but like Napster, it has a problem. In Shanghai, here's Marketplace's Rob Schmitz.
Lawyer Jack Chen logs into Xunlei and begins to download a movie.
The Chinese name of Avatar is Avanda.
10 seconds later, the movie begins. Xunlei gives 300 million people access to billions of songs, movies, and TV shows. Much of it, like this version of Avatar, is stolen. Greg Pilarowski heads Pillar Legal in Shanghai. He says Xunlei blatantly violates U.S. law, yet its name will soon appear on NASDAQ.
And that means that it's the U.S. capital markets that are actually going to fund the expansion of this company. And I think that that is of important interest to America. Should we open up our capital markets to companies whose business models would, in the United States, be illegal?
It's a question many lawyers are asking. Xunlei's been sued nearly 250 times in the past 3 years for copyright infringement. But history shows investors are more forgiving. Last year, another Chinese site carrying pirated movies went public in the U.S. It had the biggest one-day gain for a new IPO in 5 years. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation.com, protecting online privacy by removing your personal data from the internet and stopping unwanted mail. Reputation.com. Marketplace Entrepreneurship Reporting is supported by Farmers Insurance, trained local agents committed to small business success. More at 1-866-200-4BIZ.
The United Nations today formally declared a famine in parts of Somalia. The last time it did that was more than 30 years ago in Ethiopia. There is anarchy in Somalia. The U.S. government is reluctant to provide aid because of the presence of Al-Qaeda. Nevertheless, the U.N. says it needs hundreds of millions of dollars in the coming months. Well, David Orr is a spokesman for the U.N.'s World Food Program. He's with us now from Nairobi, Kenya. Hi, David.
Hello there.
What exactly does an official famine declaration do? Does that mean there's more funding going in?
It has no direct legal implications, but it does mean there's more funding going in the sense that once a declaration of famine has been made, it secures tremendous media attention and, by consequence, lots of follow-up from donors and governments around the world.
What sort of aid does Somalia need from the U.S. and from other governments around the world?
Nearly half of the Somali population are now in crisis, and 2.8 of those are in the south. It's been pretty well off bounds to most humanitarian agencies since early last year. So it's a huge undertaking, and we're all obviously looking for donations from governments all over the world to respond to this crisis. We have a significant budget shortfall for this operation.
I know Somalia is a failed state. What about the logistics of getting aid to those who are in need? How will the aid get there?
It will be difficult, but not impossible. And once we secure the conditions that will allow us to operate in there in terms of security, access, not only to deliver, but also to monitor the distribution of food, then I think things will become a lot easier. And nothing is being ruled out. We're looking at everything from cross-border deliveries to airdrops at the moment.
David Orr with the World Food Program in Nairobi. David, thank you.
You're welcome.
And finally, a new survey out this month says there's a big trust gap in the workplace. Merit's research found only 10% of all employees said they trust the management of their company in times of uncertainty. A slightly better 14% of those employees said they think their management is ethical and honest. Only 14%. The highest percentage of employees who trust the people for whom they work comes from the youngest age group surveyed, 18 to 24-year-olds. So much for rebellious youth, eh? I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. We're online at marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You could say they had an identity crisis in the run-up to the financial crisis. Public company or private?
If it walks, flies, and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And Fannie and Freddie walk, fly, and quack like private companies.
Only they're really not. I'm Kai Rizdahl. That story next time on Marketplace. The numbers from Wall Street as well. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.